Good morning, everybody. Today is Friday. Yeah, it's Friday, January 8th, 2016. And this says, before the first cup of jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy Friday, everybody. We made it. It is 22 degrees and cloudy here in upstate New York, but that's okay because it's Friday. I'm a little bit discombobulated today. It's been an entire week of running some really long tests and sitting there babysitting every little hiccup and fart. And I need to say that yesterday there were no hiccups and farts, so it made me very happy. But I am just beyond burned out. It's like I've been doing quadruple time all week. So we're going to try this. I don't know. All my machines here are on SERP mode. And I'm not even sure if I'm going to be able to get any of these stories to load, but whatever. It's Friday. All right, so where do we leave off yesterday? We titled the show Genetically Engineered Bioweapons. And I don't know, I thought it was pretty straightforward. That's what we talked about for a good part of the day, but a lot of the people, the listeners, apparently didn't find it very interesting to click on. We discussed some of the plans, the future plans of some of the things that they're working on out of a publication called Dartmouth Undergraduate Review or something. And it was pretty disturbing all the different ways that it would be so easy to kill the entire population or at least reduce it by large numbers using some of these newfangled depopulation technologies that they have with bioweapons and genetically engineered bioweapons at that. All right, well, where I think we're going to go now today, we had looked a couple days ago at the stressed out squirrel. That poor little stressed out squirrel was getting bio swabbed after being trapped. They were taking mouth swabs and fecal samples, and they were going to see how stress affected that little squirrel's microbiome. And we know in ourselves that microbiome is so important to not only our health and our digestion and our immune system, but we also know about that vagus nerve and how it touches all your organs, and they really think that they'll be able to manipulate things through that nerve, but then it gets to your brain, and they have found a direct connect between mental states such as depression and what your microbiome says. Now, in the middle of all of this new gun control that's trying to roll out here, of course, it's not like it was any surprise. We've been waiting since the Obama executive actions after Sandy Hook, if you remember. He announced all those. We were going to expand mental health care and expand our background checks and all the stuff. I mean, it isn't anything new that he's talking about trying to force through right now. Executive action it. But what has happened since that time, and this is what worries me, is that we had Mr. Tom Insel. I still never got to the story about Tommy Insel, so we're going to try and get there today. Tom Insel, the former, until November of 2015, the former director of the National Institute of Mental Health for the United States. And in November of 2015, he took a new job over at Google Life Sciences, a new little company under Alphabet that they decided to call Verity. And one of the things that Mr. Tom Insel talked about in one of his publications that he wrote is he'd like to diagnose mental disease using smartphone applications. Now, that is disturbing to me, very disturbing to me, because I was listening to Antimedia last night, and they were discussing, maybe it was two nights ago, they were discussing mental health issues and how they're going to use this to take guns away from veterans, and we knew they were always going to do that. But it gets way more insidious than that. Because if they're going to be able to start diagnosing mental disease by your voice, I was going to call them your voicel, your voice patterns, like I said, Google has the patent to open up your microphone and listen to the ambient noise in the room going on and then market to you as well. And they could be determining in the background whether or not you're a danger to yourself or others. And then send the mental health team down. Or their Google drone, medevac drone, to come take care of you. And in that medevac drone, they're going to release the mad science mosquitoes to come get you. Oh, goodness. All right, so let's see if we can find... None of my tabs. They're all here. They're all blank pages. So let's see if we can make this work. All right. Doctors. When I saw this, I thought about Tom Insel and the fact that I've been waiting to do this story forever. But I thought about Tom Insel, and I thought about like all the future implications of this. So this is something that we had always feared. And I've been calling for this since the very beginning about doctors. Now with this precision medicine and electronic health records and all the stuff that's going on, they've sucked doctors now into this web of federal relationships to do the evil bidding of our overlords. Title of this story, this is not Politico. Doctors can report some mentally ill patients to FBI under new gun control rule. Now, again, Sandy Hook and Obama's 20 executive actions, if you remember, one of the things that he had talked about, and I joked about this, but it wasn't really a joke, is getting rid of those pesky HIPAA laws. And HIPAA is your privacy protection that up until, you know, any of this garbage really started, unless you had some major case against you where they subpoenaed your medical records in like a murder trial or something, you had a reasonable expectation of privacy between you and your doctor. I don't think you have that anymore. I mean, I know the HIPAA laws are still in place, but it's like everyone is being paid off to sell out everyone. You know, turn in your neighbor for having an AR-15 and we'll give you a $100 Walmart gift card. That's the way it works. We got doctors already being bought and paid for by pharmaceutical companies. And now with Obamacare, of course, Obamacare is not considered a healthcare plan. And as not such a healthcare plan, it is not covered under the anti-kickback statutes that other healthcare plans are covered under as a part of that act that protects Social Security and Medicare. So, you know what? Doctors are used to already getting gifts, having it raining Hawaiian trips and umbrella drinks. All right. Doctors can report some mentally ill patients to FBI under new gun control rule. Now, I don't know. This might be a lefty publication, so let's try not to puke too bad. Delivering on its promise to deliver, quote-unquote, common sense gun control, the Obama administration on Monday finalized a rule that enables healthcare providers to report the names of mentally ill patients to an FBI firearm background check system. The action was one of a series of steps that President Barack Obama has called for in January of 2013 in the wake of Newtown, Connecticut shootings to curb violence. But the rule was not published until today. Well, then how did I know about this? You know why? Because I, in January of 2013, watched a live broadcast and read the transcript of the Obama executive actions. I paid attention, and nothing happened from that point. See, most people forgot about that. While the 1993 Brady Law prohibits gun ownership by individuals who have been involuntarily committed. Now, that's another question. So in 93, they again hijacked the Second Amendment, it appears. Because, I mean, they don't, The Brady Law prohibits gun ownership by individuals who have been involuntarily committed, but it still doesn't say that in the Constitution. If you have been involuntarily committed to a lunatic asylum, you cannot own a gun. Now, probably seems like a pretty good idea to not allow mentally unstable individuals who have been involuntarily committed to own guns, but on the other hand, I don't see that in the Second Amendment. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness for everybody. All right, let's get back here. So while the 1993 Brady Law prohibits gun ownership by individuals who have been involuntarily committed, found incompetent to stand trial, or otherwise deemed by the court to be a danger to themselves or others, federal health care privacy rules prohibited doctors and other providers from sharing information without the consent of their patient. Guess what, guys? That's called HIPAA. Under the rule, so guess what? He did get rid of those pesky fucking HIPAA laws. I am really offended now. He can't do that. That's your privacy between you and your doctor. And unless you've been subpoenaed, unless they subpoenaed your records, unless they get a search warrant to get their hands on your records for something that when you spilled your guts to your doctor, you assumed that there was a privacy clause, just like when you talked to your lawyer. This is pretty frightening. No, who's going to go talk to their doctor or seek help anymore if the first time they do, they're going to blow you into the FBI? Unbelievable. Under the new rule, which takes effect next month, for the first time, health providers can disclose the information to the background check system with what? Oh, without any legal repercussions. And that's what they did. They told all of these big corporations and all these professionals that they've now sucked into their machine to be their eyes and ears under the name of terror, to report you, your friends and neighbors. All these people, they promised them immunity from prosecution. Because in the old world, you would have a legal case. They broke that contract with you. If they broke that confidentiality contract with you, whether it be your cell phone provider, your internet service provider, and I'm talking old days, unless you were really doing something wrong, if you just were a little off or it caught some attention somewhere, but you weren't doing anything wrong, they couldn't legally surveil you and take all your information without some sort of probable cause. And if you hadn't done anything, there was no probable cause. If you were maybe acting suspicious, but they still couldn't do anything to you. Well, now they can. They got immunity for all these organizations that now are part of the machine. And it appears now for psychiatrists as well. So if they open their mouths and they let the cat out of the bag, they give up some of your personally identifiable information, all in the name of safety, people, they won't get into trouble. All right, let's read the rest of the story. The disclosure is restricted to limited demographic and certain other information needed for background check purposes. The rule states disclosure of diagnostics, so this is good news, or clinical information is prohibited. So I guess they couldn't give you all the way up. Paul Gianfrido, chief executive of the Mental Health Rights Advocate Mental Health America, says that he believes the White House strikes the right balance between needing to have this information shared with the FBI's background check system and protecting an individual's privacy. Current law, here we go, allows HIPAA exclusions for law enforcement purposes, but it is a broad exclusion. That's what I said. If they have a search warrant, and this is in any case, they can get access to your private records, but they have to provide probable cause. Without that, someone just can't go into your health records and start poking around. Those are all protected as private. Says that could be a barn door open if an administration really wanted to open it, and they didn't. The administration has taken great pain to try to clarify that there's very limited information that would be reported to the FBI and only within a limited group. Well, phew, thank goodness they're only going to report you a little bit versus a lot. Ridiculous. I saw friends yesterday posting about how proud they are of our president that he did this. How proud they are of him. And do you realize this is just a next step down a slippery slope that is taking us to this fascist state where we are going to have no way to get out of this mess. I don't even want to call it a police state because it's way more than a police state. It's like the control state. There's not going to be any way to get out of this. A little bit longer. And that's about all it's going to take. Now let's finish this. Since the Newtown shootings, the number of mental health records submitted to the FBI system has tripled to more than 3 million records. I wonder if there's some sort of kickback for the doctors who do that. According to an analysis by Every Town for Gun Safety, a group promoting an end to gun violence, the FBI system resulted in more than 6,000 individuals being denied purchases of firearms because of their mental health criteria. So there you go. We have been sold down the river. So let's see. I'm sure there will be legal challenges to Obama's executive actions. He says it's within the law. Republicans say it's not within the law. So they will probably have to get a court to make that decision. So anyway, one of the other things we've talked about is Tom Insel, right? The former, and just we're talking a couple months, former director of mental health at the National Institute of Health. And he's now working for Google. Well, I saw in December the good old Tommy Insel, if the story loads too, like all the others. Good old Tommy Insel. Hold on, we're going to reload this one more time. Wrote a story for Scientific American. And this was just probably 2 weeks ago. I'd like to read that one. Let's see what good old Tom Insel is thinking about. Rethinking, this is the title, Rethinking How We Diagnose Psychoses. Oh, yeah, this is the same guy who wants to diagnose mental disorders with voice patterns on smartphone apps. Uh-huh. And is now working for Google. A new study opens the door to more biologically based categories of major mental illness. Remember, too, right about all the time that all this was going on, they decided to diagnose mental illness as a spectrum disorder. So just about anybody out there now can be diagnosed with some spectral level of mental health. Including one of our favorite, which I heard now they're beating the crap out of it on Alex Jones, but oppositional, was it? Yeah. that oppositional disorder that we all have. All right. Oh, come on. This page is scrolling. All right. It says, if you are unfortunate enough to develop acute chest pain this winter, you'll probably be assessed by a clinician who will order a battery of tests to determine if your symptoms resulted from pneumonia, bronchitis, heart disease, or something else. And these tests not only can yield a precise diagnosis, but they ensure that you will receive appropriate treatment for your specific illness. Oh, God, I see how this is going. If you are unfortunate enough to have a psychotic episode this winter, however, the process of arriving at a diagnosis will be quite different. In fact, there are not many choices, and most people with a psychiatric disorder are labeled as either having schizophrenia or bipolar disorder. Now, schizophrenia is one of those disorders that they discovered long ago that there are patterns in your speech that aid them in the diagnosis. So that would be a real easy one to start with, the iPhone diagnosis of schizophrenia. Most people with psychiatric disorder are labeled as having either schizophrenia or bipolar disorder, and the distinction has been in the textbooks for a century. Schizophrenia is associated with delusions, hallucinations, an absence of affect, and chronic course. Bipolar can also involve delusions and hallucinations and typically dramatic swings in mood and a fluctuating course. But outside of the textbooks, in the real world of emergency room or clinics, these distinctions are less clear, as many patients do not neatly fit into the formal descriptions. There are no blood tests. There are no blood tests or scans to distinguish between schizophrenia or bipolar. And while clinicians have become very skilled at assessing symptoms and signs, the absence of diagnostic laboratory tools or biomarkers poses a serious problem in psychiatry. And, you know, I mean, this is something that people have been saying for many, many, many decades, calling psychiatry quack science because there are no biomarkers to this point where you can show that someone has one disease over another. There's just your psychiatrist's word and his diagnoses and then the pills that he gave you to see what's going to happen. But don't worry about it because they're working on diagnoses. It says, do all people with a label of schizophrenia have the same disorder? And what about the large number of people who appear to have aspects of both schizophrenia and bipolar? Are these disorders diagnosed exclusively by signs and symptoms, identifying distinct biological entities, or could there be many different illnesses, yes, with a continuum of psychotic signs and symptoms? I mean, this is what we're up against here now, guys. Yes, the continuum of psychiatric and psychotic signs and symptoms. These questions are not merely academic. As with chest pain, getting a precise diagnosis is important for selecting the best treatment. Moving psychiatry into an era of biologically based diagnosis, ding, ding, has been a long sought goal and a priority at the National Institute of Mental Health, where I, Tom Insel, the guy writing the story, served as director for 13 years until very recently. Now, a study published online in the American Journal of Psychiatry raises fresh hope. A study led by neuroscientist Brett Clements of the University of Georgia, psychiatrist Carol Taminga of the University of Texas, And at Yale and Harvard, and colleagues at Yale and Harvard found distinct quote-unquote biotypes of psychosis that can be identified with quantitative biomarkers. In this study from the Bipolar Schizophrenia Network on Intermediate Phenotypes Consortium, 711 people with a diagnosis of schizophrenia bipolar disorder or schizoaffective disorder were assessed with what investigators call a brain-based panel of cognitive tests, which studies eye movements, a test of cognitive control, and an electroencephalogram. In addition, each subject had a brain imaging scan. And ignoring the clinical diagnoses, researchers pulled the data and analyzed it with an unbiased criterion-free statistical method to look for what they called biotypes. And perhaps this is not surprising that the computer analysis from a large population with three diagnostic categories would find three clusters or biotypes. But the three biotypes have very little relationship to the three diagnostic categories. In fact, people with schizophrenia and bipolar and schizoaffective disorder were distributed across the three biotypes, and the biotypes did not differ simply by symptom or severity or the presence of mania-related symptoms. A few observations suggest investigators may be onto something. First, some of the biotype differences were also found in first-degree family members. And that's something else. You know, I did not see the actual transcript for his executive actions, these newest ones. But one of the things before this all happens, one of the things that was being encouraged, and this was even from the terror perspective, is that if you see something, say something, right? They've been pumping that out for 15 years now, and they want family members for the safety of others and your family and your neighbors. They want your family members to turn you in. What? Now, it used to be that if you had a real problem, you know, and there's all of us have had people in our family who've had some issues, have maybe gone off the deep end a little bit at one point in time. But back in those days, there was nothing you could do about it. I mean, I guess you could call the cops, but don't call the cops because you're going to probably end up with a dead family member. So not a good idea. Don't call the cops. But if they're a danger to themselves or others, you know, even trying to get somebody put in somewhere for a little while so they have time to get better isn't a very easy thing, even if it's very obvious that they're off the deep end. So they've been working here now for family and friends to turn in individuals that they believe are a danger to themselves or others or could do something terroristic, whether it be domestic or as a jihadi. Aren't we all jihadis now? I think so. At least according to the definition, you know. You're a jihadi if you question anything. A few observations suggest that the investigators may be onto something. First, some of the biotype differences were also found in first-degree family members. So, you know, as they start getting everyone's genome, like I've said to you guys before, they're going to be able to very easily see who is considered good breeding stock and who is disposable. Oh, look, Johnny, we're sorry. We see you have the psychotic gene, as does your mother and your brothers. Yes, the whole family can be slated for deletion. It's a frightening thought. We looked yesterday at ethnic biowarfare. That was one of the things. They have gotten to the point where they believe that they could target, and, you know, the DOD, I think, has been messing with this for a long time. But at least now, officially, they've gotten to the point where they could target, based upon genetics, pick some trait that they want to kill everyone with that trait. And as that engineered virus or whatever it was that they were working on. In that case, it was bioweapons, an engineered virus that makes the virus extra virulent to anyone with this genetic signature. And bang, there you go. Like I said yesterday, anyone with the Polish gene, they could take out all the Poles. Or any gene. I mean, you know, what's a genetic disease? I'm trying to think. There's a whole bunch of them. Like sickle cell is one. And I think that there are some rumors about in the past they were targeting sickle cell and doing some experimentation. It's very frightening. And as more and more genome sequencing is done, and they're putting all this stuff online and then comparing, contrasting with the AI software, and then running like all kinds of algorithms to find new drugs that'll cure things and whatever. I mean, there is a big production going on right now. And as they discover what makes us tick, I mean, they make it sound like it's going to cure medicine and it's going to be 21st century healthcare and it's going to be so wonderful. But it's not going to be wonderful. This is the cage closing. This is any secret that was left. That at least you could go, well, hey, you know, at least I can't read my mind. Well, that may not be so true anymore. Oh, well, at least they don't know that, you know, we had the gypsy gene. Well, Johnny, they know that already, too. I don't know. I just, it's very frightening as to how they can spin it and make it sound like it's being sold as such a good thing that people who don't use their brains just eat it right up. But I know it's not just me now. I'm hearing it echoing all over. My fears, all my worst fears are coming true. And there are other minds out there that are finally going, oh, we need to back this truck up, Chuck. Because this is going to be the medical police state. And it's even scarier than just a police state. It's scarier than pepper spray, surveillance drones, and being beaten by batons. I start thinking Mangala when I think about this stuff, with face masks and big bright lights and scalpels, you know? I mean, this is not good. All right, anyway, let's finish this. What were those places called? Like the old school mental institutions of the 1800s. I mean, nobody paid attention. Those poor people were getting shock therapies and lobotomies and all kinds of people were getting killed and buried out back, and nobody gave a shit because they said they were mentally ill. It's very frightening. That could happen again. The second that you get that stigma where you're mentally ill and they're going to bag and tag you and put you into databases with that tag. I mean, there's all kinds of other tags. Labels are evil. But as soon as you're tagged, you're going to lose all kinds of rights. And who knows how far this will go at some point in the future. This is just the tip of the iceberg, people. All right, anyway, so they're working on trying to identify the differences between different illnesses using biomarkers. First, some of the biotype differences were also found in first-degree family members, so your family members could give you away for whom data was collected, suggesting a genetic basis for the new category. Second, biotypes differed in social functioning. People in biotype 1 showing more serious functional impairment relative to other biotypes. And number 3, the brain imaging studies showed clear differences in regional gray matter, especially in frontal, cingulate, temporal, and parietal cortex. None of these observations proves that the biotypes are more valid than clinical diagnosis, and these findings together encourage a fresh approach to diagnosis of a psychiatric disorder. It will be important to know whether the genomic variation, the functional brain measures, or other behavioral measures can refine or further validate these biotypes. It might be interesting, Dr. Simon, which most of you in chat know who Dr. Simon is. He is a host here. He's been a host for probably a year or more now. On the weekends, Dr. Simon is on Sunday at 7 p.m. Eastern. And he had almost 50 years in psychiatry. And he knew the old school way of doing things, where they would talk to people and just try and work through your issues. I might actually send him this article and see what his thoughts are. I'm sure he... Medicine, of course, here we go, has become a buzzword to describe the diagnostic revolution in cancer and other diseases. And the concept is simply that the tools of modern biology, including genetics and imaging, can deconstruct current diagnostic categories, yielding more precise disease groups that can be matched to more personalized treatments. And remember, this Tom Insel writing the story, the former director of the Institute, National Institute of Mental Health, now works for Google Life Sciences. Google Life Sciences wants to put nanobots in your blood so you don't ever have to go visit the doctor again. For mental disorders, and now they're jumping into mental disorders. For mental disorders, where laboratory tests have not been used in the clinic, precision medicine could be a disruptive innovation, revealing that many of the current diagnostic categories are imprecise and biologically heterogeneous. We are seeing evidence of this in autism. Yes, and we're going to have, what, 1 in 3? 1 in 5? 1 in, I don't know, some insane number of autistic children by 2030. So we're seeing evidence of this in autism. And autism is also another disorder that they just recently ruled is not just one disorder. It's a spectrum disorder, just like now mental illnesses. We are seeing evidence of this in autism and ADHD, as well as depression and anxiety disorders. The National Institute of Mental Health has proposed a new approach to the diagnosis of mental disorders that calls for the incorporation of biological, cognitive, behavioral, and social data, in addition to observed symptoms and signs. Google's getting into mental health care diagnoses, people. And this new approach, known as the Research Domain Criteria, or RDOC for short, has been controversial, both because it represents a major break with traditional psychology and because some doubt that it is viable. The data from that study that we read about provides early evidence that this works. And of course, the real test for biotypes or any other method of diagnoses is whether or not they will be effective in targeting treatments for patients and predicting outcomes. This, of course, will require studies of treatment response. So make us all a bunch of guinea pigs. And usually the United States, people with schizophrenia receive antipsychotic medication and sometimes psychosocial supports. Bipolar disorder is treated with mood stabilizers, antipsychotic medications, sometimes antidepressants, and sometimes psychosocial supports. And in truth, treatment remains empirical, with few guides to know which person will respond to therapy. One of the hopes of precision medicine for psychiatry is that the use of biomarkers will provide more predictability so that patients and clinicians can make more informed and precise treatment decisions. And psychotic disorders are among the most disabling conditions in all of medicine, with enormous costs in dollars and suffering for patients and family. And new approaches for diagnosis and treatment are long overdue. Tom Insel is a neuroscientist and psychiatrist who served as the director of the National Institute of Mental Health from 2002 to 2015. And he has accepted a role at Verily, a new life sciences company within Alphabet, formerly known as Google. Now, one of the other things, and yes, Gringo, good morning. I think this is what you're talking about. Oh, no, this is different. But one of the other things that I heard Obama mention in one of his little teary-eyed speeches where he was going for that Emmy nomination is the new smart guns. And when we had a video back, I don't know, it was probably a year and a half, maybe 2 years ago already, they were talking about the smart guns. You'd have a little Fitbit on your wrist or some sort of little ring on your finger that has biometric ID of some kind, or maybe even a fingerprint scanner. But I don't know if I'd want a fingerprint scanner, so they'd be cutting off my fingers and stealing my gun. But they have some sort of biometrics that allow you, the owner, to be the only one to be programmed to handle that gun. But some of the issues that we heard, I think actually they were talking about it on Primetime Tuesday night, was that the distance that you can be from that little biometric sensor that you've authenticated with is not very far. So if you were changing hands or changing magazines or doing something, that they would become unreliable because it would stop working. And that's the thing. I mean, a friend and I have had long discussions about gun control. The one that disagrees with me on everything. And maybe it's not even disagreement at times. Sometimes it's just a whole different take completely. We don't see, that we see the world very differently. But one thing that was very interesting is that the reason why he thinks that biometric firearms, biometric controls on firearms won't become big in this country is because they're unreliable. But I'm going to say, regardless of how unreliable they are, they'll make them more reliable. I don't know. Maybe they'll put some sort of little insertable under your skin. You can get an implant, you know, like Regina Duggan, DARPA Google's Regina Duggan said, give you your magic powers. You'll be able to open doors and pay your bills. Log into your medical profile to give your daily statistics to the machine. I mean, maybe not tomorrow this isn't going to happen, but I definitely see it happening. I think the old school world of firearms, the days are numbered. I think they're going to pull it. I really do. And the scary thing is back when they first started coming out with these smart guns, we covered a story about them using some of those firearms over in the Middle East. And they were giving these guns to quote-unquote insurgents. But what was so interesting about it is that they were able to program these firearms to only work within a certain GPS set of coordinates, let's say, or within only a certain range of hours during the day that they would be able to be fired. And I was like, wow, you know, we don't even know, like guns that are being manufactured now, of course, we think that they're standard, but how would we even know if there were some sort of little sensor or something in there that at some point in the future they would be able to enable or disable? We don't. Just saying, it's not, smart guns are not science fiction. They're already out there, and they're calling for them. So I think we're going to have to pay attention to this. All right, let's get off the guns. I want to get into psychopaths for a minute now because this is a brain day. It's supposed to be. I've got about 20 stories lined up all on this topic. And my browser's to the point where I have so much open now, nothing works right. So we're going to lose a whole nother couple shows if I don't work through these quickly before I have to either reboot or the whole machine crashes here. All right, sciencealert.com. If this loads, the brains of compulsive gamers are wired differently, study says. And we knew that. One of the things that in my own research that I had discovered, and I think I'm going to have to All right. We might have to do the Lonely Elephant song while I'm working on this. Do 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 do. Now my flash is going page unresponsive. I'm waiting for Skype to get out of not responding mode. Do 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 do. I don't know anymore. Do 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 do. Oh, I think the oboe comes in here. Do 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 do. Do do. Come on, Skype. What the hell is going on here? See, I think I just. I am a memory suck on my machines. Come on. I want to read the story because with that brain project, remember DARPA's involved, Google's involved, Microsoft's involved, National Institute of Mental Health is involved. They're all involved. All the universities are involved. That brain project to crack the nut of the human brain. All right. Come on. Still in not responding mode. Still in not responding mode, and it's Friday. Come on. Well, I can't do anything right this moment except sing. Can we please have a piece of equipment that has Windows on it that works? Oh, now the other machine is in not responding mode. Yeah, I love oboe too. My growing up, here we go. Growing up, my orchestra instructor, I don't know, he took a fancy to me. He tried to pretend like he was my dad. And, watched out. He used to investigate all my boyfriends and make sure that they weren't troublemakers. But he had a son also. And his son was a friend of mine. He was in all my classes. We were in the advanced math, English, band, orchestra, whatever. But Dan, the son, Dan played like every instrument under the sun, as you can imagine, if you had a father who was orchestra instructor. You know, and the whole family was musical, but he played every instrument, and at least wind instruments, so not every. He didn't do strings. I was strings. But what was neat, I loved when Dan played oboe. There's just something about oboe. I hate clarinet. My sister played clarinet. Flute's nice. All right, let's see if this loads now. Now we're trying on a different computer. And I'm sure my husband is wondering why I dropped a link to the story to him in chat in Skype. He's messaging me now. All right. The brains of compulsive... So there was a little intermission. The brains of compulsive gamers are wired differently, says study, and that is a good or a bad thing. Now, I've read a lot of stories about this. One of the things that we discovered is that video games, like I've been saying, cause a rush of dopamine. Dopamine is the addiction chemical. All of these little devices cause us to produce dopamine. When you get a new email, you produce dopamine. When you do cocaine, you produce dopamine. When you smoke a cigarette, when you drink some beer, when you're having sex, you produce dopamine. The addiction chemical, the one that feels really good, that makes you want some more. And what they found in gamers, especially compulsive gamers, is that the more dopamine that you cause your body to produce because you are requesting more and more by continuing the activity, the more dopamine that your body's going to require. Just like any good addiction, the more you do, the more you need. the next time you need more to get the same fix as you had before. And what they were finding is that in gaming addicted children, that section of the brain that produced the dopamine actually got larger. And when they did fMRIs, the brains of compulsive gamers looked very much like the brains of diagnosed psychopaths. Oh, yes. And psychopathic disorder, narcissistic disorder, whatever you want to call it, character disturbances, as Dr. Simon calls it, require lots of dopamine. They get off on that. They like the excitement. Everything's about excitement. And when you're no longer exciting, they throw you off the train head first. We are creating a generation of gaming psychopaths. And what's even scarier than that, though, is this is all a part of being sucked into the machine by the dangling carrot that you're willfully paying attention to as you're frolicking off the cliff. Anyway, let's read the story because I'm almost out of time now. Too much singing the happy elephant. The brains of compulsive gamers are wired differently, says study. According to the scans of nearly 200 adolescent boys, the brains of compulsive video gamers are wired differently from the norm. Researchers have found evidence of hyperconnectivity. Oh, yeah. This is actually how they're trying to spin this as good now. Like, I've been noticing in a lot of these publications, they're not focusing on how it turns you into a psychopath. No. What they're focusing on is they're saying it makes you smarter because it's creating all these new neuron connections inside your brain and it makes you smarter. Well, I don't really think, though, that that's the part we should be focusing on, considering we're creating psychopaths. We're creating smart psychopaths, apparently. Researchers have found evidence of hyperconnectivity between certain areas of the brain, as well as increased levels of distractibility. And yes, we're making children with ADHD. The study focused on boys aged 10 to 19 seeking professional help for internet gaming disorder. Oh, check this out. A condition that has now been listed in the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders is needing further research. So DSM-5 or 6, I'm not sure which one's out now, will probably include this new gaming disorder and typically involves gamers who give up sleeping and eating in order to keep playing. And yeah, I've heard stories of people dying because they played for days on end and never moved. Brain scans of those with the disorder were compared with another group of boys who aren't addicted to video games to see how the neural activities matched up. And the MRI scans found enhanced coordination in the salience network part of the gamer's brains. And that's the area responsible for identifying what's important and focusing the body's resources on it. Yes, very, very, very useful to a child that we've been training on video games for 10 or 15 years who then goes into the military when they turn 18. Yes, that's exactly what it was intended to do as well. In everyday life, it could be stepping out of the way of an approaching car. In a video game world, it means dodging a hail of bullets. Yes, and in the military, it does as well. Or dropping drone bombs on people. Hyperconnectivity between these brain networks could lead to a more robust ability to direct attention toward targets and to recognize novel information in the environment. The changes could essentially help someone think more efficiently. And I'm going to say bullshit. Yeah, maybe it makes you more focused on your fucking game, but not on the rest of the world and what is going on. It makes you manipulated and controlled and addicted is what it does. And this makes me so angry that there are actually quote-unquote science publications that are out there spinning these video game addictions as good. I've seen this so many times now, like kids trying to, people trying to justify why it's good for their children to sit in front of the TV for 10 hours a day all summer long and never even see the sunshine. Most of the differences we see could be considered beneficial, says the study's author, Jeffrey Anderson, from the University of Utah. However, the good changes could be inseparable from the problems that come along with them. Says the academics behind this new research say that it is the most comprehensive study yet of differences in brains of compulsive video gamers, and it joins a growing body of research looking into how this part of our digital lifestyle could be affecting our physical and our mental health, both in positive and negative ways. And the findings have been published in the journal called Addiction Biology. Guys, anyone who tries to tell you that being addicted to anything is beneficial for your longevity has a screw loose, and especially when it is being sucked into the machine, into this digital alter reality, so they can manipulate and control you. Yes, it's good. Little mousy, come eat the poison peanut butter. Come bite the poison apple, my pretty. I mean, this is what it is. And it's okay. It's very disturbing. All right, guys. Well, I don't know if I'm not going to make it. Everything is locked up here. If you can even believe it, though, it's Friday. Oh, yes. Here's a headline that came out yesterday. Is Yellowstone about to blow? I mean, we've heard this so many times, but check it out. Scientists are now warning over a super volcano that could kill millions. Wah-ha-ha-ha. Just to start 2016 off right with a bang. All right, guys, make sure you stick around, because guess what? It's Friday. Lonnie Clark is up next, and all kinds of great radio today with LaVon live at 11 p.m. and Josh live at 6. All right, have an awesome Friday. I will catch up with you on Monday. Everyone take care.